Hello and welcome to HFMA Talk, the podcast for NHS Finance. My name is Lisa Robertson and I'm Policy and Research Manager here at the HFMA. I'm delighted to be joined today by Jonathan Webb, Lead Director of Finance at West Yorkshire ICS, Jane Hazelgrave, Director of Finance at the Mid Yorkshire Hospitals NHS Trust, and Dawn Hanwell, Chief Financial Officer and Deputy Chief Executive at Leeds and York Partnership NHS Foundation Trust. In today's episode, we have the opportunity to listen in on their conversation as they reflect on how system working has developed in the ICS, lessons learned, and what's next. So welcome, everyone, and thank you for taking part today to share your story. Over to you.
Okay, thanks, Lisa. And good afternoon, Jane and Dawn.
Afternoon.
Hello.
Hi. So we're here just to reflect a little bit on West Yorkshire and our journey over the last sort of 5 or 6 years. I think it's just worthwhile setting a little bit of context around West Yorkshire. So we are the fourth largest ICS in the country. We've got a population of 2.4 million people across rural and urban areas. And we are in a patch that's quite afflicted in terms of levels of deprivation. So 25% of our population live in the most deprived 10% parts of the country, and 20% of our population come from a minority ethnic background. I think one of the things that makes us different is our emphasis on place. So we have 5 very strong places, and we still now have 5 very strong CCGs that map coterminously with 5 unitary authorities. We were very lucky and honoured to be mentioned as Integrated Care System of the Year last year in the HSJ Awards, which is fantastic. And this afternoon we're going to have just a little bit of a look back on our journey, really. So if I sort of go back to 2016, which is when I sort of first sort of became part of West Yorkshire, and if I recall that very first meeting that I went to where all of the CCG CFOs and all of the provider DOFs were there, it was a really difficult meeting. And I recall it was about plans. And my recollection is that people weren't getting on. People were disagreeing about the most fundamental things, disagreeing about numbers. There was lots of with respect, but those sorts of conversations. Yeah. And I just wonder, when we sort of think back now, I suppose, what did it feel like at the time? But also, what were the things that sort of got us out of that sort of conversation into a more positive one, do you think?
Well, thanks, Jonathan. We're talking about Normanton, which listeners won't actually know, but that's the physical place that we used to come together, isn't it? And I think for me, if I say it were a forced marriage, I think you probably, you know, appreciate what I mean. It felt like that, you know, we were mandated to come together, weren't we? It wasn't initially something that, you know, we were comfortable with, I think. And we were very all, I think, on a personal level, very organisationally focused in terms of priorities. So my job and my world was all about LYPFT, protecting the interests of LYPFT, maximising the benefits for LYPFT, and the concept of an integrated system. Conceptually, we weren't there, were we? I don't think in those early days. So I think that's why we struggled in the beginning. And that's natural, I think, actually. Mm-hmm. Anybody would struggle in that scenario. But it was that physically starting to come together regularly, because we did, and we committed to coming together regularly, that we started to think about ourselves as a group and coming together as a system. So I think that's just my initial observation on the early days.
I think from my observation as well, is I think in terms of, I think we had a constrained financial environment, mm-hmm. and the providers were still at odds with the commissioners and CCGs to try and get the best deal that they could. So there's some conflict about getting the best deal with commissioners, but equally recognising that they also are slight in competition with some of the other acute providers potentially. So it's about how can we, so when it was all, as Dawn's described, is about individual organisational entities, and also never looking across our organisational boundaries to understand a different perspective and understand mm-hmm. financial positions across West Yorkshire, or even to a certain degree feeling that that mattered because we were concerned about our own financial positions. At that point, there was no real incentive, I don't think, to come together. And I think that commissioner provider split perpetuated that as well at that point in time.
I mean, for me, one thing that started to make it a bit more real and a bit more worthwhile was, and this is a bit about where national policy can, it can't force people together, but it, you can provide some sort of signals and incentives. And the ICS capital, you know, the wage one to four tranches of capital that came out round about that time, sort of 2017, I think was one really visible and tangible thing that started to almost sort of set something that said, if you work together well, if you seem to be credible, if you seem to deliver your financial positions, and if you can demonstrate how you're working together as a system on some joint projects and joint capital developments, you are more likely to be successful in this round of capital bids. Yeah. And I think that started to bring us together around something that was quite visible, really.
Yeah, I think that was absolutely true, Jonathan. And I think what were really helpful about that process, and I remember being part of that process, actually the equity of how we looked at it, the fairness we looked at it, and that's when we started to get that understanding of, you know, what the mental health sector needs and some of the issues, what's going on in acute land. It actually brought it to life, and we had really healthy conversations about business cases that were really like important things for us to do and understand across those boundaries that Jane said. And, you know, because I started to learn things then that forced me to learn things about other organisations and other parts of our system. So I think it were a really good exercise that brought us together for a purpose, because the prize was some money, some capital investment, but it were a good process that actually started to build those relationships. I think you're absolutely right.
Mm. But the other thing I think it was helpful is that, you know, our top priority at that time, I think it might have been wave two, was around not a hospital development. It was something different, wasn't it? We wanted to prioritise a new CAMHS inpatient unit for West Yorkshire. So, you know, really clear that sort of parity of esteem thing. We want to put top of our priorities something to do with mental health. And again, that sort of helps signal, I think, there's something a bit different, a bit out of the norm. I guess it's a funny one, because whilst I look back quite fondly at that process because it brought us together, equally now I've been probably making the case, it says actually, now we are mature, now we are established, give us more flexibility around capital, stop constraining us in terms of, you know, pockets of money for specific things. So it was at the time, but I think it was really, really helpful. I mean, I just wonder, Jane, particularly because PBR was certainly one thing that was getting in the way in a lot of the places. I think you sort of referred to that earlier. Do you want to sort of just give your perspective on sort of, you know, how we got to where we got to with PBR, because we have made some quite big changes there.
Yeah, so just for the listeners, Yorkshire Hospitals have been in financial special measures, and we're a trust in financial recovery. We're part of the FIP programme, and we've had a lot of national programmes that we've had to go through in terms of financial recovery. And I started in January 2016 with a significant deficit. And at that point, it was still all about trying to get the best deal that we could from commissioners, and being unable to seek that middle ground of a win-win solution. We just couldn't do that. So we were in deficit. And then, to be perfectly honest, in terms of, we were successful in our contract negotiations, and we also had a change in our board. So our exec team significantly changed, and the organisation really started turning round, and we started delivering from an activity perspective, which came as a bit of a shock to the CCG, and it caused the CCG financial problems. The trust was still in financial difficulty, and we did struggle to come up with a solution that we were both happy with. But in 2017-18, we tried to do what people can now call an aligned incentive contract. And I can remember those conversations. And what we did was we agreed a contract value, and we had a £2.8 million risk reserve that we spent all year arguing about who would put the money in if the risk materialised. And that's all we talked about all year, were a £2.8 million risk reserve and who would put the £1.4 million in. And in terms of the financial position of the trust stabilised, I think the CCG stabilised, but we still weren't in financial balance. And then for 2018-19, when we did the contracts, we're never going to talk about a risk reserve again, because all it did was distract. And what we really did was we agreed a block contract. And although the deficit of the trust at the time, we ended up after PSF and FRF was still an £18 million deficit. But it was a control total that we ultimately agreed with NHSI. So it enabled us. It's a big, massive, big leap of faith, to perfect lines from a trust perspective, because our gross deficit was £30 million, and our net deficit was about ended up being just under 20. But so at the time, but we had to, we knew that we had to become more mature. And so we worked through a position where we had a contract, was the essential block contract. But what that did is it enabled us to start some transformation in a way that we've never done before. The trust had also partway and completed what they called acute hospital reconfiguration, and there were some significant service changes. But we knew we could, we'd almost got our configuration right in terms of acute take, and it enabled us to do things like, you know, different pathways in terms of what we call STEX now and those kind of things. And then 2019-20 was probably as we moved into another year of an aligned incentive contract, 19-20, it made the massive, massive difference. I think we quantified the benefits of probably about £6 or 7 million worth of activity that we're no longer counting because we've actually transforming and doing things differently. Massively changed the relationship with the CCG. And now, as we, in fact, last year, we agreed transformation posts for both planned care, unplanned care and community care that are funded by the two CCGs that are actually managed by the trust director here at Mid-Yorkshire Hospitals, but work across the system. And if I think about now how mature those relationships are to 3 years ago, that there's just absolutely, there's, you know, it's been significant. But the 1920 was, and it's the first year that Mid-Yorkshire Hospitals actually broke even for the first time in about 10 years. It was a pivotal year for us, very, very much so. 1920 was there. And unfortunately, we had this thing called COVID that has sort of like taken away, but we're trying to get back to where we are in 1920. But you're right, that was a definite good year for us all in the place.
Yeah. And I think there was that bit about learning from each other, Jane, through that process. So I think that at the time we had six places, didn't we? Because we lost one sort of along the way when Harrogate sort of moved to a different ICS. But I think we had a position whereby there was one patch that started, one place that started with the land incentive contract arrangements. It was Leeds, I think, where Simon Witherton had moved across from Bolton sort of to bring that Bolton model and to replicate it in Leeds. And I think that just spread. So we had two or three following the following year, two or three following the following year. And I guess the important point was there'd almost been a narrative that said, well, how can you put a land incentive contract in place when you're a financially challenged place?
Yeah,
well, we were all financially challenged. I mean, yeah. some significantly. But that wasn't, you know, to break into it, to do something different. As you say, that act of faith, that leap of faith, meant if we carried on doing what we were doing, all we were doing was swinging deficits from provider to CCG just year on year, which was destabilising. But more importantly, the conversation we're having weren't the right conversations, were they?
And that's the
thing that's changed.
I think it's really helpful for me there, because if I'm honest with you guys, it felt like, you know, frustrating from a mental health sector perspective, because we'd always been on fixed block contracts that always gave you a high degree of certainty. It didn't stop you squabbling to some extent, but you had a high degree of certainty. So, and I remember those conversations and journeys around moving to the aligned incentive, and it felt like a leap of faith from your perspective. I understand that, Jane, but for me, I felt it like then it got us all onto the same footing, and that actually we had certainty. We had risk, but at least we had certainty. And then I felt we were all, even though we've still got that mix of foundation trust, non-foundation trust, different regulators, I started to feel at that point we were all getting onto an even keel. Starting the year with risks, but all starting on an even keel, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess the other bit just of reflection really is because, you know, West Yorkshire has been a financially challenged patch for years. And as you say, Jane, you know, Mid Yorkshire's, you know, one example which had been in deficit for you know, to a decade or more. 2019-20 felt like a bit of a tipping point for me, really. And it was, there was a few things that happened at the same time. So we sort of, we formally became an ICS, so we moved from being an STP to an ICS in sort of April 19. And we all signed up to this single control total thing. Mm. So as a system, we'd been sort of about 30 million off plan the previous 2 years, and goodness knows how much in years prior to that. But the fact that we all had a very definitive plan to work for, we put faith on system delivery, but we knew we had risks when we started the year.
Yeah.
And what sort of struck me when we went through the year is that the risk that we knew about at the start of the year did emerge, and some unforeseen risks as well in some of our other places. But the way that we worked with NHS England almost a bit of a joint approach in terms of, you know, scrutiny, support, etc. within those places. But then when we got to the point where those we felt as though collectively those places had done all they could have sensibly done in that year, the fact that we all then said, actually, well, what can each of us do in our own places to sort of support, that felt like quite a step forward and a real demonstration of partnership working, really. You know, that you're there to sort of support your partners, and if your partners have done all they can, what else can you then do on top of that? So that felt quite a good year in some ways, although incredibly challenging.
So when we, if you remember, even when we had, you know, I mean, there were relatively small planning gaps, weren't there? But we did have planning gaps.
Yeah.
And we did a few scenarios, if you remember, when we had, I don't know, X million about, right, so we all changed our control tools and we put a few of the different scenarios, didn't we, about that. We've never done that before in terms of how we're going to allocate this planning gap. But we did that, didn't we? We've been through that arbitration. Everyone takes £500,000 or whatever. But equally, you know, and we've worked together at year end to deliver the best result. But I think there's two things that I think that we've done that's very, very mature. The one is our 10 principles, which are aligned to the delivery of the strategy, which is focused on patient, doing the right thing, and trust. And I think those, when you read them, I think are very, very important. But then our risk management strategy, which is about organisation, then place, then system, that's really worked in our favour as well, because when we used to look at financial results, it used to drive me mad, saying, why are you putting Wakefield CCG next to me? I need to know providers and commissioners. Yeah. And we wanted to see that sector split. It was that place that it meant something. And it was, you know, challenging us all. You know, you challenged us, stop talking sector, think about place as well. And place has become important, hasn't it? How we manage, and we've all got our own governance in each of our places where we all meet together. And then we also meet together across West Yorkshire. And I think those partnerships are important, and that risk management strategy that we've had has been very, very effective, I think.
I think one thing to add to that, you know what I was reflecting on that year, that 1920 year, you're right, the formality of coming together as an ICS. I think as leaders, how we give our own chief executives, because I always remember you, Jonathan, saying, talk to your chief exec, clear it with your chief exec, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's one of our responsibilities, clearly, isn't it? But we sorted such a lot out as a set of doffs, but we always had our chief execs with us, I think, along the way, most of the time, I would say. And, you know, they put a lot of faith in us too, didn't they? Credit to them too, in terms of giving us that role and confidence, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's something about the formality and even the principles that you mentioned, Jane, because I think, because we put those in place just at the start of the COVID pandemic, didn't we, to sort of say, look, we know the financial arrangements are going to be different this year. How can we locally make sense of that to make sure that we do the right thing for the patients, the right thing for the population, the right things for our staff, as well as the right things for our organisations? But I think that they set us in really good stead in terms of dealing with all the nuances and complexities and idiosyncrasies in some ways of all the sort of the arrangements that have been in place in the last couple of years. I think my one reflection though was because we've not really formalised anything prior to that. We've done some initial work on how we would deal with financial risk to an extent, but it was quite high level. We'd almost not attempted to codify what we'd done. We'd worked out our own risk management policies in some ways just from doing. You know, we'd learned by doing. We'd not said this is the formulaic approach to how we're going to manage risk in 1920, which was a difficult year.
Yeah.
We'd said we think we're going to work together, but we're not quite sure how yet. And I think we learned a lot through just doing, you know, and it was that change in the behaviours that came, because there was the bit about, you know, one fails, we all fail.
Yeah.
But then there was the bit about actually wanting to help a colleague, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. I think the other thing about risk management, which is interesting, so in this year, we've been able to use our maturity. So elective recovery was a good one, wasn't it, in terms of when the elective recovery policy first came out this year, and we talked about it does present opportunities and challenges because we're such a large ICS, and it's about, so if I'm, as a provider, spending a lot of money to recover my position, but in the bottom right-hand corner of the ICS, we don't deliver because if we didn't have a system view of what we were doing, we knew that from a, you know, in terms of investment, we potentially would invest money, not get the funding back. And if you remember, we also talked at length about, well, what do we do about if one system provider spending a lot of money and we don't actually get the elective recovery fund? We reverted back to our risk management policy, which was about it's individual organisation, then place, then system, rather than creating a set of even more complicated risk management arrangements around elective recovery. We've gone back to the standard risk management policy that we've had before. And then as we've come through to the end of this year, and you know, most organisations, I'd say 95% are fine. We've got one organisation with a few challenges, but people have rallied round, haven't they? And they will deliver financial balance. And again, that's a real commitment to our partnership working, that you know, every organisation will deliver financial balance, even if there's risk in one. So it's actually come out of their place, hasn't it? So it's actually, we've used that. It's about organisation, place, but then other places are supporting that individual organisation. You know, so I think that's been in really good.
I think that that commitment to make sure nobody's left behind, call it what you will, that actually we're in it together, gives you that sense of, you know, you've got your responsibility and accountability to do the right thing and for patients and everything, but you know that I feel that we know that we've got each other's back. And that actually we've moved money around system, we've found the flexibility. It's your point, Jonathan, you just have to sometimes do it and see how it pans out. You have to take, you know, some risks and some faith with each other, don't you?
And that's the thing, I suppose, because, you know, I guess I sometimes sort of reflect on, because I think we do some really great work on partnership. We, you know, we're supportive in terms of how we deal with risk, but I think we're sort of professional and constructively challenging as well. And that's all fantastic. But it sometimes is, you know, I often have to check myself, say, why are we doing this? Well, we're doing it because it's our statutory duty. Yes, absolutely. But we're doing it, I think, part in the main to ensure that we can work together as organisations. We can integrate care where it's required across health and social care potentially, and we might want to come into local authorities in a minute, but it does mean we can do that West Yorkshire system wide stuff like we've done around hyper acute stroke services, like we've done around vascular services, like the examples you just referred to worked on, as well as that current work, Jane, that's ongoing around on surgical oncology at the moment. So there's lots of things that we can do where finance can set the lead and set the tone, almost to allow, to support, to lead some of those other conversations, which I think finance sometimes got in the way. Got in the way in the past in some of this.
I think absolutely, to be seen as the enabler, not the barrier, which sometimes finance has been accused as the barrier. And I think we've demonstrated massively how we've actually enabled through the work that we've done together. And, you know, I think, yeah, we've been a massive enabler to make some of those things happen.
Yeah, I think as well is in terms of, so for people that don't know, we've also got mature provider collaboratives, both for mental health community and acute. So, and I think, so we talked at our last meeting, didn't we, about procurement, which spans more than one provider collaborative, and said we need to work together as a system, not just in within our sectors. So we're thinking about how we change our governance, aren't we, about how we meet and come together on the thing that's important. So I think the thing is about this, our governance and how we work will evolve as we go forward. It's not set in stone, and we've got to think about how do we change going forward. So that's important. And then the other thing from, like I said, the acute provider collaborative, sometimes as finance leaders, we sort of like work together to send a message out across our organisations. The example being is for example, very high escalated rates during COVID, during January and probably December, January, in terms of our all in response to high levels of sickness. And we as finance directors have done that sharing of what you're paying. And we've also sort of like agreed, look, we need to take this back to our organisation. This cannot continue as we're going to February, March, April, as we come out of these temporary COVID arrangements. So we actually we mutually support each other as a profession to take back to our organisations, as well as representing our organisations themselves, if you see what I mean, which is slightly different, really. So it's using that maturity that we trust each other, we've shared rates of pay, and it's like, but these are the things that we need to do together. And I think that's quite an interesting dynamic, really, as we've matured and come forward.
Yeah, Jane, I think that point about being able to reflect where we do things at place, where we just get on with it as an organisation or a sector. And then having that, you know, the procurement's a good example, isn't it? We could have taken a are really honed in, you know, WIAT, that's the West Yorkshire Association of Acute Trusts, for listeners, our mental health perspective. But actually, we've said, well, for this issue, no, we need to have a wider coming together. But it is a one size doesn't fit all, isn't it? And I think for us, I think that works really well, where we know we need to operate as sectors, where we need to operate as place, where we need to operate wholly as the lot of us. So yeah, like you say, that evolves, doesn't it, and changes.
I mean, the other thing that you know, often comes up in our conversations is about how we properly work with local authority CFOs and DOFs in terms of progressing that whole integration of health and social care agenda, how we make sure we make the best of the public health resources that are in our places. And it has to be said that at a West Yorkshire level, I think there was some quite strong initial interest from local authority DOFs. I'm going all the way back to 2016 now, when the concept of an STP plan first came into fruition. And I think the first sort of three or four meetings, you know, there was a high attendance, I think, from the sort of five or six local authority directors of finance. And I think after that sort of interest waned slightly, didn't it? I think it all felt a bit technical for them. It all felt a little bit too NHS sort of plan centric. So I think we all in our individual places do some really good work and have very, very strong joint arrangements on the service side, on the public health side, and on the financial side. And you know, and that spreads to things like that joint appointment in Calderdale of the accountable officer, who's also the chief executive local authority. And Jane, in our patch in Wakefield, it also spreads to the CCG accountable officer also being the director of adult social care and now the director of community services at the acute trust, the combined trust. But the traction at a West Yorkshire level just doesn't seem to be there. And I often challenge myself, is that right? You know, is that right? Because the West Yorkshire construct is important, and there's some really good things that we can do at a West Yorkshire level that won't happen at an individual level, just because of scale often. So I just wonder about your sort of thoughts, obviously, from the Wakefield and Leeds perspective on that.
Well, I think I wouldn't beat yourself up about it, Jonathan, because I actually think the subsidiarity issue and the place issue, I think that's where local authorities come to the fore in the place, in the place relationships. And, you know, because if you think about their world and their emphasis, it is about local communities, isn't it? It's about so I think that's where it works best. And, you know, from a Leeds perspective, we do have really good working relationships. We have in our DOF forum, we do have the local authority representatives at place. And you're right, a lot of what we come together as a West Yorkshire is very NHS centric, is the stuff that we need to plan and the principles we need to. And it's how we as DOFs then take that back into our place conversations, isn't it, that I think is really important. I think personally that the place is the place for the local authority relationships.
I think that might evolve as well, Dawn, because we've only got the newly, I'm going to say, is it newly appointed, is it West Yorkshire Mayor, Tracy Brabin, isn't it?
That's true,
So I think that they're probably, as local authorities and working together, they're probably many years behind us, because they don't have that, I'm saying, common purpose, common objective. And to a certain degree, it's what you said, Dawn, it's because theirs is about local services for local people. But there will inevitably be something that is across West Yorkshire, and perhaps as we have more of a West Yorkshire strategy, West Yorkshire Mayor, that they might find they've got more things in common, and they've probably got a journey to go on, haven't they, in terms of how they work together, that then might at some point bring them a little bit more. So, but I think I agree, Dawn. I think the importance is about that integration of health and social care at place, but ultimately there might be some strategic stuff across West Yorkshire, whether it's through, I don't know, I know transport is a, I don't know how that relates to health, by the way, probably getting to work, I don't know, but I'm sure the show there might be something forward.
Yeah, I mean,
doesn't it?
And you're right, Jen, there is, you know, there's a construct already, which is the West Yorkshire Combined Authority that deals with some sort of work, you know, certain West Yorkshire issues. When I've heard previously about Manchester and the way the local authorities work in Manchester, the impression that I always get is they work for probably maybe a little bit more collegiately and a bit more collectively than in West Yorkshire. So I think things will change, won't they? I think as West Yorkshire emerges as a statutory body, I think the concept will start to grow in some ways.
I think we're right. Yeah, it's a journey for them and for us, and you know, but I think it works really well at place. So I think that's a great starting point, isn't it, to get that integration at place.
If I went back and just sort of thought about, you know, on the last 5 years, what is there anything that we've done that you think, oh, I wish we'd not done that now? Or is there anything that you sort of wish we had have done that we've not?
Well, one of the things that it's not a huge issue, but I think you've referenced it before, Jonathan, when we started and we used that word, which didn't sound good when we talked about having an inner circle. And when we used to bring a subgroup together to try and discuss things, and then weren't always confident that they got distilled right and the connections worked. And actually, we sometimes ended up duplicating conversations we'd had in inner circles with a wider group anyway. So I think we quickly got to a point where we felt that perhaps that wasn't the best route to actually keep the channels of communication, decision making, you know. So it wasn't a huge issue, but I think we tried to do it for the right reason. But I think we quickly recognised that, you know, while we're a big big geographical patch, we're quite a quite knit group of people. And then we developed our deputy networks really well, didn't we, as well? And I think that's one thing that's helped us, you know, be able to operate in the way that we operate without having to have inner circles or subgroups.
I think it's a really important point, Doug, you're right. I mean, so we do aim for inclusivity in our decision making now, don't we? So we've got the 10 provided offs, 5 CCG CFOs, myself and colleagues from some of, you know, NHS England and so on. So we do try to make sure that it's a, you know, and it does get that buy-in in a way that I think by creating almost like smaller executive groups, it just didn't really work for us, did it? And
not really.
So much, and you can see that playing out at a West Yorkshire ICB board level as well. So if I think about the minimum requirements for the in the constitution for members on the ICB board, you know, we've ended up with probably around about 24 people now on our board as named members. So, you know, I think there is something about making sure you have all the voices around the table. And that is about making sure that you get that inclusivity, that buy-in, but it also means you're probably going to get a better answer, to be perfectly honest, because you get that diversity, don't you?
I've got one good and one probably for the future. So one good, I think, is as we've had all the programmes that the ICS are leading in terms of man-marking them with a lead CFO finance person, because you know, we were worried, weren't they, that they weren't going to spend the money and they had to spend it, or B, that what they were spending it on and how they reached out to the rest of the system, and so that we're all aware. So I think that has made a difference. So we are taking a leadership role with our peers to make sure that those programmes are a little bit more effective. I think in terms of future, I think the lack that we have is a really definitive clinical service strategy. I think we've got bits of one, and we've done things around the edges, whether it's vascular oncology, they've done things for mental health. But I think in terms of elective recovery, and I know, and because we'd already started the work on a clinical service strategy pre-COVID, COVID's come along and it's taken the wind out of our sails a little bit. Mm-hmm. And now we've got to have an elective recovery strategy with potential, and also community diagnostic hubs. And I'm not really sure that those kinds of things would take a long time, be engagement with the public, be looking at different sites. And you take your time to do those things, and they've sort of like been thrust upon us, and I'm not saying we will have a suboptimal solution, and it might be that we do have an optimal solution, but we're doing things really fast that I think we're probably, if we'd have had a more refined and developed clinical service strategy, those things might have been a bit easier. But I do think it's because of the COVID, we were already doing that work. I think COVID has completely knocked us sideways, but now we're responding in a strategic way to some big, difficult issues. I'm not sure that we've potentially got the answer quite right.
Just thinking about the I guess the sort of the what next, really, because I think I think we are quite humble in West Yorkshire, despite the fact that we won the ICS of the Year award last year. I don't think we're sort of particularly ones that sort of shout what we've done from the rooftops, but you know, I feel as though we've, you know, I think collectively we all recognize we've done okay these last few years. I think we've worked really well together, you know, and the fact that we turned the tide in terms of deficits in 1920, so we had a surplus for the very first time, and we did that through supporting each other, felt really good. And we've, in some ways, I think we've continued in that supportive way of working throughout COVID from a financial perspective, as well as all the operational, really important operational stuff that's happened as well. You know, so we've we landed the position, if you like, didn't we, in 2021, and we expect to land it in 2022. And we know we've got some challenges ahead when we start to think about next year. But what do you think is going to be sort of different? And I guess there's a bit in my mind about what we keep that works and what might be different as we sort of head into a both a post-COVID world, but also a bit of a post-CCG world as well.
So I think we've talked about the importance of place and subsidiarity, and that's an absolute principle, I think, of West Yorkshire. So as the CCGs cease to become statutory organisations, there's two things. One is that we need to keep what works. But secondly, I think we've got to open ourselves to things that could be different. And we've got to do both those two things. And I think the keeping what works is probably going to be easier in terms of the what do we need to do differently might be a bit more of a challenge. And that's going to be the interesting thing. But I don't think we can stop ourselves from doing that. We've got to be open to change and think about is because I do think, you know, for people I've worked in, you know, acute trust, then SHA, CCG, acute trust, and I'm here now. But so as I've run around the system, I do think there is duplication. I really do. And we've got to be brave enough to take that out where it's not adding value. And I think that's my perception of where we are. But again, place is very important in terms of the five places. We are working, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, but also be brave enough to make some of the changes that you need to make.
I think you're right, Jane. I think what will be important in terms of what needs to change, and I say this with the greatest respect to the commissioning world and function, the emphasis now is partnership and collaboration at place. And I think we need to be careful about language around, you know, this is partnership, it's not Big Brother. And I think we're already beyond that. But if you go back to the long history, it's we've got commissioning intentions. We've got commissioning intentions. We'll commission you what to do. Whereas now we're in it together as a population health, best deal for our patients in a collaborative mindset. And, you know, I don't work in CCG, and it must be difficult for colleagues at this moment in time getting their heads round that. Changes and stuff and the notion of we're here to integrate a place, but that statutory commissioning function at place is not really there. It's about collaborating and being in partnership, isn't it? So I think that will be a challenge, if I'm really honest, for all of us to truly say, but we make collaborative decisions, not a commissioner says this and a provider responds. And I think we're grappling with a little bit of that, I think, if I'm honest, at the moment.
I mean, there is a bit of a question for me about how we make the best of the best use, if you like, of the new governance arrangements, because yes. because they could be quite powerful. A powerful as in a force for good, not a powerful as in taking responsibility, or, you know, clearly accountability will sit at a West Yorkshire level, and that's really clear. But the authority will be delegated to places for the majority of decisions, unless it makes sense to do it at West Yorkshire. And I just wonder whether I've been reflecting from a financial perspective, there's an awful lot of work that we do around financial performance and financial plans that I think we keep largely within the finance community at a system level. And I think part of that is because we know we can work together pragmatically, we can do that, or we can do it based on a set of principles. So often we are solutions focused. So, you know, once we know what the issue is, we'll work out a solution, we'll suggest it, we'll recommend it, if you like, to system leaders who will say, yes, that's fine, let's get on with it and do that then. So I think there's an awful lot of autonomy within the finance community. But I just think we're missing a trick in terms of sometimes having that wider discussion about finance at a system level that involves the nursing director, the medical director, the director of people, the patient voice, health watch, etc. So those conversations happen, but not always about money. And I just think there's something about making money more visible as a lever for change, money more visible, a lever for change around population health and health inequalities in the future, in maybe in a way that we don't now. I think it just feels like the next bit of our journey, I think.
Yeah, I think then that links to Jane's point about how do we get a real West Yorkshire sense of a clinical strategy that's going to do the right things for population, and how does that align to what will be a constraining financial picture, won't it? So we've had 2 years where, you know, it's been hard, operationally and in delivering in COVID, but financially, if we're really honest, it's been, there's been sufficient funds in the system, mm-hmm. haven't there, to get us through the COVID period, and it's going to be different. And I think it's that finance is a lever for change. And just picking up your point, there's things like big decisions we'll have to make on estate when the capital constraints are, you know, there. So we really need that good governance and that linkage to what are we here to do to make the right decisions, because we're going to have some big decisions and some big risks around constrained envelopes of capital and other things, aren't we?
And I think, John, that's where the foundation that we've got, because we've got that strong collective sense of working together,
absolutely,
I think will make some of those things less difficult than they would otherwise be.
I think we've got better, I mean, capital's a really good example where we know how tight it's been, how tight it will be, but we've got good foundations, haven't we? Mm. But what we need is that, your point, clinical buy-in in terms of some of difficult decisions, because they can't always seem to, I mean, I think we are a good leadership team, but we need our clinical colleagues and we need that leadership, don't we? We need the clinical leadership alongside us. We've talked about that, haven't we, about the connection between ourselves and clinical leaders.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the other bit I just want to touch on briefly, and in a way, I think you sort of alluded to it in terms of, you know, the changes to CCGs. I guess it's just that bit about recognising, I think there's something about the power of the West Yorkshire Finance Function as one cohesive whole, you know, the 10 provider teams, the ICB, newly formed finance team, you know, it's hundreds of people. And I think there's more we can do in terms of some of the One NHS Finance agenda, some of the equality and diversity and inclusion issues that I think we've already made some really, really good inroads in terms of ADI ambassadors, financial sponsorship program and the reciprocal mentoring scheme. So there's some really good stuff we've started to do, but there's loads more that we could do. And I just think having that capacity and that critical mass, I think will make a huge difference to how it feels for us, our teams.
I think that's absolutely right. It's great. We've got such a opportunity there, haven't we? With, like you said, the critical mass, our size and scale, to really develop the finance profession at sub-director level in a way that's, you know, I'd be quite excited if I were fairly new starting in my career, which I'm obviously not, but and we've got to support that, haven't we? But it's quite exciting, really.
So any other sort of thoughts about sort of challenges ahead? I mean, clearly there's the, you know, next year settlement and the year after and the year after that is all good. It's going to be sort of tough. We're going into sort of new governance arrangements. What's the positive outlook on all this?
I think we've got a group of leaders that are dedicated to delivering across West Yorkshire in the way that not just their individual legal entity. So if you think about it, the legal statutory legal entities that we've got, one ICS and we've got all the providers, we're still separate statutory bodies. But I think everyone acknowledges in our place that the ICS is just as important as our own statutory bodies. And I'm not sure that's probably the same in others, because I think it's their own statutory organisation is much, much more important than the ICS. But if the ICS doesn't succeed, it just limits our ability to succeed as an entity in an organisation. It will have financial implications and ramifications if we can't deliver. So I think that the positive is that we've got the right conditions. I think we've got the willingness. And I think that we will adapt and change and do the right thing. That's my personal view. So I think we've got a lot to be positive about. And I think we'll continue to be one of the best ICSs going forward. I'm sure we will.
Yeah. I agree. I think the fact that, because actually it leaves us the ability to get on with it, the fact that we've got, you know, we're reporting as one, you know, you're right, Jane, we've got statutory organisational duties and all of that. But actually, we are together as one. And it just actually frees us. I think it actually frees us to get on with stuff, actually, that to me, to some extent. Mm-hmm. So I think it's in mental health sector, I think we're going to, there's some great things to be done that actually this construct will really enable. So I'm quite excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, there is a bit about, you know, we've all, I think, worked in the NHS for certainly a large part of our careers, and, you know, in some ways we'd say, well, we're absolutely NHS through and through, wouldn't we? And I must have been sort of thinking about this recently, because I think I would say that I'm NHS through and through, but I'd say increasingly I'm I'm ICS through and through, and it's not just about the ICS, is it? So it's not just about the NHS, it's about the NHS, it's about local authorities, it's about the BCSE, it's about public stakeholder groups, it's about communities, it's far broader and wider. And I think there's been a, if you went back to 2016 and said, well, what's all this about, what's the ICS there for anyway, we certainly don't hear that anymore, do we?
No.
It's almost, it was what's the ICS ever done for me, was the sort of the question that was posed in the early days. And I think that we all can see the benefits. We can see what's in it for patients in our population by working in a different way. And that's ultimately why we're here, isn't it? So
we've got a huge amount of money collectively to do the right thing. So I think there's more ability to transform and do when you've got that, critical mass. There's more power in that, isn't there, than each individual organisation stranded trying to survive.
Thank you all so much for your thoughts and your time today. I really enjoyed listening to your story. Thanks to all of you that have joined us today for this episode of HFMA Talk. I'm sure you'll have found it interesting and helpful. And don't forget to subscribe today to keep up to date with future episodes.